my Wrangler jeans from Walmart are legit my favorite go-to pants. They got that slim cut that's always fresh for going out.
Hey, what's up?
They're durable enough, even for my shift.
Order up!
And stretchy enough for when I want to kick back and chill with a movie. So basically, they can do it all, and on my budget. I mean, come on. You really can't beat all that. Shop your Wrangler pants at Walmart.
Thanks for listening to the Hit That Line podcast network. You can now download our new app in the iTunes or Google Play Store. Listen anytime and anywhere on your favorite mobile device. Just search Hit That Line now. Subscribe to the Hit That Line podcast network.
This podcast is powered by the pros at Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric. Arkansas owned, Arkansas operated. GoPascal.com.
You're listening to Wound Wrap with Dr. Doug Friesen on the Hit That Line podcast network.
Welcome to Wound Wrap. I'm your host, Doug Friesen, a general surgeon for 25 years and the medical director of a successful wound clinic for the past 11. Our goal is to be informative and empowering for patients with wounds, the family of the wounded, and nurses and caretakers of those with wounds. The focus will be the diabetic foot ulcer, but we'll cover all kinds of wounds and the facts that surround them. The content of this podcast is intended for general education only and not medical advice. Listeners should seek their individual care from their own physician, and particular results from their general information is not guaranteed, and your own success may not be typical. Content presented is not on behalf of any organization unless otherwise disclosed. Well, today I'm thrilled to have one of my good friends, Ray Bandy, with us. He's a good friend and excellent physician, and we've been in the trenches a bit together, haven't we, Ray?
We have. Yeah. Done a lot of work together.
You bet. Well, you're an infectious disease specialist, and tell us about your road to becoming an infectious disease doctor.
Yeah. Well, the first thing is, of course, get the medical degree, which I went to the University of Missouri Columbia, and then
well, we won't hold that against you.
Well, and vice versa from a Kansas Jayhawk perspective.
Yeah.
Then I decided to do internal medicine. And one of the subspecialties of internal medicine that I was drawn to was infectious diseases. Mm-hmm. And after you do your 3 years of internal medicine, then you can apply and compete for fellowships, which are an additional 2 years of subspecialty training in just infectious disease. So I graduated from the University of Missouri Med School and then did my internal medicine at the University of Oklahoma. And then did a fellowship in infectious disease at LSU, and then entered into private practice after that.
Yeah. Wow. How interesting. So tell us what you do every day. I mean, what's your typical day?
Yeah. The typical day is to start out and by making rounds at the hospital, and we see infectious disease consults in the morning. One of the things about infectious disease that I think is kind of unique is that we are our own specialty, but we receive consultations on people from all different specialties. Mm-hmm. So OBGYN consults us, family medicine consults us, hospital, general surgery, you name it. All of the different areas of medicine have specific infectious disease complications. And much of medicine deals with infections. But when you have a serious infection, for instance, for this podcast, a serious wound infection for whatever reason that is not healing, or it has a difficult bacteria, or the physiology and the anatomy is such that it makes it very difficult, that's when we get consulted. So we don't see very many upper respiratory infections, bronchitis, et cetera, but we see a lot of pneumonia that has been there for weeks and months. The physicians have been trying to treat it. They can't get it under control. They can't take care of it. And then we'll be called in to see if there's something we can do to help out.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So you get to see folks when they're really pretty sick.
The majority of what we do deals with patients who are very sick.
A lot of life and death.
It's a very interesting specialty because there's so many different problems, and the problems are very difficult. But one of the things you have to overcome as an infectious disease doctor is that it's not inherently a happy specialty.
Right.
So we're dealing with people where they will have a severe wound on their foot, and there is no guarantee for them they're going to even be able to save the foot.
Sure.
So we're going to do everything that we can to help them. But it's never really a happy moment when, you know, we're telling, look, this is so bad. If we're not able to be successful, if you're not willing to do what we tell you to do, you're going to have an amputation. And so it's a great specialty, incredibly interesting specialty, but there's an inherent difficulty because of how sick the patients that we deal with are.
Right. Well, I thought it might be interesting to think about maybe just a fictitious patient, but this is one that you and I have seen several times. Let's say there's a 50-something-year-old guy, type 2 diabetic, maybe just a little bit overweight, has a foot wound and some red streaks coming up the leg, starting to run a fever. You get consulted. So what is the approach you might take on that person?
Yeah, the first thing is to see really how sick this patient is.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the chronic, the things that we're going to talk about these patients are secondary to whether has this with this case presented, which has an ulcer, it has a secondary infection which has broken out of the ulcer. And so we're looking, has there been any tissue destruction?
Yeah.
Does the patient have gangrene?
Sure.
Does it have a flesh-eating bacteria? Is the patient bacteremic?
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing we look at is...
So bacteremia would be
bloodborne infection.
Yeah.
Where you're going to walk in the room and tell this patient, you've got bacteria in your bloodstream. Here's the way it is. If we take care of this, you live. If we don't take care of it, you die 100% of the time.
Right.
And very quickly, actually.
Yeah, sure.
So so we look at the acuity of the situation. And then if we're able to control the bloodstream infection, if that's there, or if we're able to take to stop the destruction that this bacteria or the toxins that this bacteria is producing, if we're able to stop that and we're able to control that, then we begin to take a look at what caused it.
Yeah.
So we want to say, what is it? What are the risk factors? Do you have diabetes that's not well controlled?
Yeah.
Do you have arterial flow issues? 100% of my patients who have extremity wounds will get arterial flow studies.
Yeah.
So we want to know, is there something that's going on there? A lot of my other patients are very overweight. One of the big and new diagnostic criteria that's being explored nowadays is cirrhosis-associated immune deficiency, so CAIDS, if you will, CAID, which is a big deal. And you would guess that this would be a problem with wound healing if you had cirrhosis. But it turns out you could also term this liver injury. Immune deficiency. So if you have significant liver injury, even though you don't have cirrhosis, from too much alcohol, from hepatitis that's not been well controlled, all of our patients who do not have good wound healing have a hepatitis profile that's done.
Sure.
So we're looking at hepatitis C, hepatitis E, which are both completely treatable. So we're looking for the underlying reason why this patient's foot would not be healing.
Right.
And then the next thing that we go to is, what are the other specialists that need to be involved?
Sure.
So while we're looking at the antibiotics and we're getting the cultures and we'll see what we can do, We're also 100% of my patients with that situation have wound care involved, whether it's general surgery in the hospital or outside of the hospital in the wound care clinic. All of them have that. All of them have vascular examinations. Sure. I mean, just this morning on rounds, I did. We had three different patients who we did vascular consults.
Sure.
So can we evaluate the blood flow to the lower extremity?
Because in a way, even if you give an antibiotic, if there isn't blood flow to that foot ulcer, it won't get there.
No, it won't get there. You have to have a concentration of the antibiotic that's significantly greater. What's called an MIC, significantly a greater penetration into the tissue to be able to kill the bacteria. If you don't have flow into the foot, then you don't get the antibiotic there.
Right.
But not only that, even if you got the right antibiotic and you get the right concentration, if you don't have oxygen that gets to it, then you have no chance to have healing.
Every podcast I've said blood is life.
Yeah.
You know, without blood, you don't get oxygen, you don't get any of the nutrition.
Right.
And healing doesn't take place in a vacuum.
Yeah.
It's a very specific process. You have to have all the nutrients. You have to have the ability to actually heal.
Yeah.
And that includes good arterial supply, the diabetes under control. And we'll go through more of that.
And not only the arterial flow, but also the venous return flow.
Right.
So patients who do not have good venous return will develop, have a diabetic foot ulcer and a venous stasis ulcer because their arterial flow may be good, but if the venous return is not good, then also you get inflammation, breakdown, wounds, poor wound healing, et cetera.
I think about those venous wounds, like the difference between a really pretty stream that's just beautiful, and that's kind of the normal vein.
Yeah.
And then you have an old farm pond that and it just has algae and so forth on
stagnant.
It and stagnant, and the tissue literally dies over the top of that. So that's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a whole podcast. We're going to think about all those wound things that happen on the vein side. Yeah.
Huge thing for us. Ischemic wounds, arterial flow insufficiency, but also venous insufficiency are big deals for us.
So from your standpoint as an internal medicine doctor and a specialist in infectious disease, can you talk about how diabetes affects wound healing and the control of infection?
Yeah. One of the big things I always tell, of course, you could do a whole lecture just on that issue, diabetes and wound healing. One of the first things that I tell my patients is because they don't want to be serious about their diabetic care.
Right.
Okay. They want the right antibiotic. They want to open up the arteries.
Right.
But they're going, why can't I have that Twix candy bar?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why do I have to cut down on my sugars? And that is that anytime you have a blood glucose that's greater than 175, and how many diabetic patients out there have glucoses over 175 all the time? When you have a glucose over 175, you decrease leukocyte ability to both move and migrate to the area of the infection, but also it decreases the ability to phagocytize or eat the bacteria that's there. So even though your glucose...
So let me just... those are the white blood cells.
The white,
And the white blood cells are good for phagocytizing or eating the bacteria.
Right.
They're also, the white blood cells do the first parts of wound healing.
Yes.
And so if they're basically made inactive, then it doesn't matter what you do.
Right.
It's the patient isn't going to get better.
Right. You get over 175 or 200, 250, that type of thing, and go on up, you're inhibiting the ability of the white blood cells to kill the bacteria and to heal the wound. And which is one of the things I tell so many of my patients, just this one thing, and no one slapped me yet for doing this, but I will tell them, look, you have a problem that I can help you if you will do what I tell you to do.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
That's the good news.
Right.
Here's the tough news. You need to lose weight.
Yeah.
You need to control your sugars.
Right.
You need to keep your physician's appointments. Keep the fluid off your legs.
Sure.
All these things we can talk about.
Yeah.
But the main thing is that there are people out there that want to help you, but you're going to have to help yourself. You're
right.
going to have to do what we tell you to do. If you're committed to do that, I've seen unbelievable, almost miraculous wound healing. Not everyone gets better.
Right.
But it's amazing how many patients I've had where finally there comes that point they say, I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to keep my blood pressure under control. I'm going to keep my doctor's appointments. I'm going to take my antibiotics. I'm going to go to wound care. I'm going to keep my glucose under control. And all of a sudden, their body that has all of these wonderful ability to heal themselves, it begins to kick in and they have a good response.
Yeah.
On the other hand, my patients who refuse to take wise advice or just make the tough decisions it makes to save that foot or that leg, they end up in trouble. There's no
sure.
guarantees to begin
right.
with. But if you won't do some basic things, like keep sugars under
sure.
control, diabetes under control, you're going to have a hard time.
You know, I tell everybody, I'm not going to heal you, but I can help you do it.
Yeah, right.
So
no,
if there's a problem,
exactly.
you can always go look in the mirror, and usually the problem is staring right back
yeah.
at you.
And
yeah.
I try to, my patients who do well, they take a vested interest in their own health care.
Right.
Right. They're going to help. They're going to see this done. Now, maybe I can help them. Sometimes
sure.
I can't. I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes everybody does everything they can, and you end up losing a toe or a leg
yeah.
or what have you. But your chances of success are much better
right.
if you'll simply do some of those basic things that people have been telling you all along. Keep your glucose under control.
Yeah.
You know, change your diet, lose weight.
So this person who's in the hospital, he's 50-something, diabetic, and has this red streak. So you're going to order the arterial
right.
evaluation, maybe get someone who has an expertise in that on
right.
board. We did talk to Dr. Al-Shafi. He was on our second podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and he's just terrific at that.
Right.
Maybe think about someone to get rid of any tissue that isn't alive anymore.
Right.
So that's kind
yeah,
of clean it up.
Right.
And maybe get a tissue culture.
Yeah. One of the things that we have a protocol for, if I could back up just one step, one of the things I didn't mention is that a lot of times there are underlying problems like bone infection
oh, yeah.
that keeps the skin from healing.
Sure.
So on all of these patients, we're getting MRIs or a CT scan, bone
sure.
scan,
mm-hmm.
to make sure there's not underlying bone infection. Because there's underlying bone infection, everything else can go well. If you don't get rid of the inflammation of the bone, the skin is not going to heal. Well,
yeah.
Over that, so we're looking for every particular reason that may be causing it. Now, when it comes to infections, there are some chronic wounds which are not actively infected. And we're not looking to put people on the antibiotics
sure.
just for staying on antibiotics.
Yeah.
But if you're taking a patient who we think they're infected, first of all, a swab of a foot wound doesn't help very much because you're just going to get what was on your socks in between
sure.
your toes and your shoes.
Yeah.
So what we do is we clean the wound
yeah.
Very, very vigorously. And then we try to find the leading edge of the infection. And then we actually will do a punch biopsy or we will, in some other way, we'll get a piece of tissue that we think is infected.
Yeah.
We let lab know that it's coming down. That's put in a sterile cup. And then they do whatever miracles they do
yeah.
to identify the bacteria. Because we want to know what's causing the infection. We're not so interested about the 3, 4, 5, or 6 bacteria that are just hanging around. And so that helps us narrow the things down. Very often, we will have someone send us a a swab, there'll be five or six different bacteria. Really hard to know which one of those or which one or two of those is causing the trouble. So what we do is clean it up. We do a, they call it a deep wound culture, and we send that in. Yeah. One other thing is sometimes you can't get the culture you want. And we know from very large population-based studies, evidence-based studies, that all things being equal, there are certain bacteria that are more aggressive in the skin. And so even if you have five bacteria that you grow out, if you have Staph aureus, that's usually the one that's causing trouble. So we always cover for Staph aureus, but there could be some other peripheral bacteria, and you'll see those like Stenotrophomonas or some resistant Enterococcus, etc. And they may be commensal or just hanging around colonizing bacteria that don't have to initially be covered for.
So colonizing means it's there but not causing an infection.
Exactly. Right.
But you're looking for the ones that are actually. Yeah, I actually have
the
a
one
little,
that's invading.
Yeah. I have a little. A knife blade in a circle.
Yeah.
So I can get rid of the top. Things that are really just, I might as well be checking the skin out because that's all that is.
Yeah.
Getting rid of that. And then I can get actually a tissue culture.
You want a deep tissue culture when you're looking for a wound, or otherwise you're just going to get whatever's hanging out. And then that, in the world we live in today, creates more problems because if you try to give antibiotics for all those bacteria and they're not involved, you're going to resistant bacteria, which then becomes a problem for everyone in the medical environment.
So, I mean, I have times when there's bone hanging out of the wound, and so we'll take that bone and send that for culture, which is not always easy because it's interesting that bone doesn't always have really good blood supply, does it?
Right. No.
I mean, and it can take, whereas the soft tissue might take a 10 days or 2 weeks, bone infection, how long would you treat that? This is in general. We're not talking about specifics.
If you've got bone infection, by definition, you need at least 6 weeks of antibiotics. And there, once again, there are large studies that are going on to see what oral medications, which ones, how long may be most effective. But right now, the standard of care is still IV antibiotics. Yeah. So we give people 6 weeks of IV antibiotics. And even with that, if it's a well vascularized piece of bone, cure rates are only like 80 to 90%. So, and some of my patients will say, well, what if we get 6 weeks of IV antibiotics for a bone infection and we fail? That's when you turn it over to wound care, you turn it over to surgery. Yeah. We want them to debride all the devitalized tissue. We want them to get down to a good normal blood supply. All right. And sometimes that means amputation.
Right.
And then we start all over.
Yeah.
So ultimately, the cure rate's 100%. But if you fail, then we're looking at debridement back to healthy tissue that gives us a chance of being successful.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So when we think about, one of the things I want to do on this podcast is help people understand when they need to seek medical care. So if you have a wound on your foot, you really need to go see your primary care, and then they can kind of get things going.
Right.
But also questions to ask your doctor.
Yeah.
So if you have a red streak coming up, that's when they may want to get an infectious disease specialist involved.
Right.
So now you have not just the wound, but you're starting to get some tissue around the wound being infected and probably going to be hospitalization. But that's a time to start running, not walking to the doctor.
It really is. Yeah. I think one of the most incredible things that I have witnessed is people who have diabetes and diabetic neuropathy, they don't check their feet every day.
Right.
I've had patients show up with a nail in their foot for 2 weeks, and they didn't know it. I've had patients that I've dug a piece of rock that they stepped on, 2 weeks ago. So the first thing is somebody needs to be checking their feet and then taking precautions that they don't set themselves up to get wounds. But once you have, if you have a risk factor, If you've got arterial disease, you got poorly controlled diabetes, you've got peripheral neuropathy, and you look at that foot one day and you go, there's an ulcer, that's when you need to go to your doctor.
Yeah.
And I would certainly encourage people to go to their primary care physician. But if somebody calls us up and says, we have an ulcer on the bottom of the foot, we got diabetes, we get them in,
right,
and we begin to work on that.
Yeah.
Very cool. I think one of the most important things, maybe not a question, but for patients, if I was a patient, I would be trying to say to myself, does this physician really care about this?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, are they really invested? Does it bother them that I've got an ulcer on the bottom of my
right.
foot? And so you want somebody who cares, because very often the ulceration, the ischemic ulcer, the diabetic ulcer, this is a problem you have to deal with for a long time.
Right.
And you want someone who's going to say, I'm going to be in it until we win this, or until if we lose, everything has been
yeah.
done. So I think one of the big things is first of all, is this physician, has he bought into the process?
Yeah.
If you're getting sloughed off, you need to go somewhere else.
So just so you know, that was one of the things that made me want to do this podcast.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
I want to have physicians on this podcast that are invested in getting
right.
patients better, number one.
Right.
But also give patients the understanding of, hey, what are questions I need to be asking my doctor?
Right.
Doctor, do I have enough blood flow to my foot
right.
to heal the wound?
Right. Or another question that I think a lot of my patients need to ask is, they've been seeing somebody for months and they're not any better, you know?
Yeah.
And at that point, I think you really need to say, is there a specialist? Okay, is there a wound care center? Is there an infectious disease doctor?
Yeah.
Is there somebody who specializes in this who can help you out?
Right.
And make sure that, you know, that they're there. Or at the end of it, ask the physician, well, what's the prognosis? What's the chance I'm going to get
yeah.
better? Or the other thing is to be open enough to say, what do I need to do?
Right.
Because I would really be hard-pressed to think of a lot of patients with chronic wounds that there wasn't something they could do to help, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a two-way street. You
right.
want a physician who really does care, or they're bothered by the fact that you're not better. There's something within them that's driven to help you get better.
Right.
But then you also need to be open enough to where you're willing to make the changes as a patient that it's going to take to have a good outcome.
Yeah, I think that is important. But as a layperson, they don't always know. So you have
yes.
to have someone
right.
that helps you down the road.
Right.
And so we're trying to kind of give folks the idea of what to do and who to go
yeah.
see and the kinds of resources that are out
yeah.
there and are available in virtually every town in America.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. I would be looking for specialty care, okay?
Yeah.
Somebody that specializes in wounds. If there's an infectious component, somebody specializes in infectious disease.
Yeah.
One of the other things is that I've known of even primary care physicians who had never had a patient they had in hyperbaric oxygen.
Right.
So you got a chronic wound, you're not getting better. It's amazing how many patients will go for years. And the question of, well, should I have hyperbaric oxygen, you know?
Yeah, it's always a good question. We have patients in there every day.
Right.
And that, along with the IV medication
yeah.
and the proper debridements and treatment and making,
right.
yeah. So all of those things.
Well, there isn't, I'd be hard pressed to think of anything in medicine was more of a team sport
yeah.
than wound care.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there's multiple different people who are going to be involved in helping that patient get better.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I kind of enjoy about it, actually.
Yeah. Right.
That we all work together and we each have kind of our part to play in that.
Right.
I've been fascinated by some of the research looking at insulin resistance, which means I'm not diabetic, but I'm acting like a diabetic. You know, I'm not healing wounds, and yet, well, doctor, I'm not diabetic. I'm not even pre-diabetic yet.
Yeah.
And then some of those patients that have difficulty, I'll follow along, and all of a sudden, whoops, they're pre-diabetic now.
Yeah.
And then maybe they'll heal, and then they'll be back here and forth once or twice a year.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, they're diabetic.
Yeah.
So have you noticed that to be...
You know, for me, the majority... I have had patients that would fit that scenario. For me, the majority of my patients who they know they're diabetic...
Yeah.
And their diabetes is poorly controlled.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be, but it is.
Yeah.
And actually, that's one of those areas where I try to involve the endocrinologist or the person in the community who specializes in diabetic care. I feel competent at a certain level. But it's one of those things where I very quickly invite someone to help me, because that's not my area of expertise.
Right.
I mean, I feel
so interesting.
Good.
Sure,
I feel good at a certain level, but the minute I give them some good ideas, that type of thing. I mean, for instance, one of the biggest deals out there now is Ozempic, semaglutide Ozempic, Wegovia. There's one other pharmaceutical company who makes it under trade name. And these patients not only improve their diabetes control, but they lose weight.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so there's a few things like that that I can do to help these folks. I feel pretty good with insulin. But I try to get the endocrinologist on board very quickly.
Right, continuous glucose monitoring and all of that. Yeah. Interesting case, something that maybe you, you've dealt with recently.
Yeah. And before we began recording, I told you of a case that just happened. The good ending was just a month or 2 months ago. But this is a guy who came in to see me 4 years ago with poorly controlled diabetes, and he'd already had a right above the knee amputation.
Mm-hmm.
So when he came in, the ulceration that he had on the dorsum of his left foot was so severe that all five bones were exposed. Not the whole bone,
right?
But they're all five exposed. Whenever he would move his toes, we're looking at his tendons.
Right. So we kind of call that an anatomy lesson.
Yeah, right. No, it's
giving
it's
you an anatomy lesson.
It's a horrible horrible wound.
Sure.
And this patient, you know, we went through the whole process that we've talked about, arterial flow, diabetes, et cetera. But the biggest problem was this patient never really would buy in to doing what we were telling to do.
Yeah.
And we would do a little bit better and then a little bit worse. And I think more than anything else, he refused to take care of his diabetes.
Yes.
Okay. Very overweight. He's not going to lose weight. And he loved peach mango milkshakes that he would make himself.
Yeah.
And he would drink peach mango milkshakes, okay, all day long, all right? And we would tell him, you know, there's about 6,000 calories a day you can cut out there, and he wouldn't do it.
Sure.
And we never would succeed. Finally, the wound became so bad and so painful that we put this outdoors gentleman, very nice, very intelligent gentleman, into the hospital. And we told him, all right, if you want to save this foot, this is what's going to happen. And he spent a little over 2 weeks in the hospital. And in the hospital, we controlled his diabetes, his diet, everything. And his foot began to improve.
Mm-hmm.
And then we sent him to what's called a swing bed, where he could get specialized rehab care. And that went on for another 2 weeks. So after a month in the hospital, this patient went home. The interesting thing was, even though his foot got better, it was such a horrible experience for him that he said, for the first time, I'm going to do what Dr. Bandy told me to do.
Right.
And he switched to some sugar-free iced tea.
Yeah.
It's sweet tea, but it's sugar-free.
Right.
Arizona or somebody makes it. And cut back on his milkshakes. He lost about 30 or 40 pounds. We put him on some Ozempic, And he began to take his blood pressure medications. He had some trouble with hygiene, began to keep himself clean. He let somebody come in. And after this guy had had a wound, I think it was for 8 years, and I had tried my best to treat him for 4 years. And then all of a sudden, with the hospital experience, he gets a jump start. He starts doing things that's right. He loses some weight, gets his glucose a little bit under control. And the last time I saw him a month ago, after 8 years with a full thickness wound, skin had completely grown over the wound, and he saved his leg. And that's something I thought that would be impossible. But it's a good illustration of how once he bought into the program, once he decided he was going to do the things he needed to do, this thing that was threatening to destroy his life. I mean, you know, if you're an amputee on both sides, you're in trouble. And completely healed up. And I guess that's another thing too, is for patients out there who've had an ulcer for a long time, is I start to say never give up hope. I want to qualify that by the fact that sometimes your doctors are going to look at some patients and say, we've done everything you need to do, and you're going to have an amputation. But I can tell you this, that while I'm glad that we have patients like the one I've shared who after 8 years healed, I've had many different patients who we did everything we could do. They did all they could do, and they had an amputation. That's the bad news. The good news is nowadays, with the technology they have for prosthesis and the curing up the stump and things like this, I have yet. I mean, I got a lot of gray hair now. I've been doing this. I've been doing infectious disease since 1991, and I've never had a patient who I recommended, okay, now's the time for an amputation, come to me and say, I wish I hadn't done that. Now, it's psychologically, it's hard. It's difficult. But they get rid of the chronic wound process, and they move on down the road. And, you know, like a patient I had in Northwest Arkansas, I worked with this guy for 10 years. And finally, he had his first amputation. That went so well, he had his second amputation. And within, I would hate to exaggerate here, I think it was within 3 months, he was playing golf, okay, for the first time in 10 years.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And so, and we don't want that to happen. Right. We want to save limbs.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit of a silver lining, you know, behind the dark cloud.
If something does happen, then...
Right, if something happens, even if you lose your leg, with the technology that exists today, you're going to even be more functional. I mean, I wouldn't trust everyone, but if Dr. Friesen said, you need to have an amputation... Mm-hmm. It's going to be better for you if that happens.
Right.
We don't want that to happen. But if I give everything I have to save someone's limb, and legitimately I'm able to tell them, hey, it's all been done. You've done your job. We've all worked hard. Now you're going to have a BKA. You know, these folks, in my experience,
can do pretty well.
100% of the time, they end up doing
well. But one of the things that I'm hearing from you, though, is that taking it serious early can sometimes help you from getting to that point. And that's why we're doing this podcast.
And that's the thing, Doug. I mean, if you think of the patients with early wounds, it's hard to think of one who, if they would have taken healthcare seriously, okay, sought medical care, got good specialty care, it's hard to think of one of them that would have lost their limb. You know, they're out there, especially with some of the inflammatory dermatologic disorders that there's nothing we can do anything about. But other than that, if they show up quick and they take part in the process, we're able to help them.
It's a very good chance that they can be here.
Tremendous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, as well as I know there are some individuals out there, probably a lot of folks who would say, well, we can't afford that care. I can guarantee you in the institution I'm at, we will make that happen. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, if you don't have any resources, you're not being turned down at the door,
right?
You know?
Sure.
And and the hospital and the group that I work with, it may be difficult. There may be some hurdles, but it's going to be taken care of. You're not going to have to sell the farm. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You know, you're not going to have to, you know, adopt out your kids because
right.
you couldn't afford to
right.
take care of it. You know, the people who care about you are there, and
yeah.
they're going to make your health care
a possibility.
That's a good word.
I always like to think about what's on the horizon.
Yeah.
So you've got your ear to the ground, and you kind of mentioned it earlier, thinking about if there's bone infection, maybe there's an oral
yeah.
thing on the horizon. There are a lot of new antibiotics. You
right.
want to just kind of
yeah. well,
shoot us a couple things?
For bone infection, the big deal is because there's been so many patients who can't take IV antibiotics, primarily IV drug abusers,
sure.
et cetera.
Yeah.
We've used oral antibiotics, and we've found that a lot of them have been successful. The problem is that there are studies out there right now that are trying to define which oral antibiotic was the best
mm-hmm.
And for how long do you use it. There's an extremely expensive medication out there called Tadalafil. It is the brother to linezolid, which is Zyvox.
Okay.
Zyvox is restricted because it has a lot of side effects. Okay.
To take it for six weeks would be difficult.
Right. Tadalafil, its brother, has all the effectiveness and almost none of the side effects.
Oh.
The problem is it's $3,200 for three pills.
Okay.
Or if there's a pharmaceutical rep out there, you know, you could, maybe I missed that, but
right.
it's close to that.
Sure.
It's $2,800. And so that, but it will become generic here before long. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, the price is going to be cut, and all of a sudden you're going to have an oral antibiotic that's going to be just about as good as the IV antibiotics
yeah.
that we have. The other big thing I think that's out there is with a lot of the wounds not the infected wounds, but the wounds like stasis dermatitis that are driven by inflammation is the biologics.
Yes,
there are already studies that are going on with your, you know, something, Anumalab or whatever.
Right.
You,
yeah.
And there's one, there's a study that I'm watching that's going on in Europe right now, and they're having really great results with people who have end-stage stasis dermatitis. And so it's not available here. In fact, the particular biologic's not even available here. But people are looking at that, and so there's really a lot of hope. For a lot of stasis dermatitis ulcers, we'll use topical corticosteroids.
Sure.
But there will also be biologics and things of that nature, which you can use topically. So those are the things that I know of. Not very many of our patients will have these superbug, super resistant organisms, but there's antibiotics out there for them. I can tell
yeah.
you there is no resistance pattern in the world today that we do not have a good antibiotic that we can use.
Yeah, isn't
now,
that great? Because that
yeah.
was 20 years ago. The idea was, hey, it's
yeah.
it's going
right.
to be bad, and we're going to have all these things. But
right, but all,
so far, medicine has been one step
has,
above,
has
ahead
stayed
of the
ahead
bugs.
Of it.
Yeah.
And there's been a couple of times where, for instance, where we are here at Baxter, we'll call the CDC and Atlanta. I mean, they'll ship out some antibiotic. We'll have it the next day for some super resistant bacteria, and the patient has the advantage of the even in a rural hospital, in a rural community, a good-sized regional hospital in a rural community, but nevertheless, what you could get in any major city in the United States, we can have it there within 12 hours.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've noticed is specialty care. I like the idea of family practice and internal medicine, you know,
mm-hmm.
as a primary care for adults. But when you have something that's very specialized, there are things that you bring to the table that I may not be able to just call the CDC up and
right.
even know who to ask. And I'm going to have things
and I've got
from
the
wound
number.
Care.
I can tell
yeah.
you right now.
Right. You've
yeah.
got their 800
right.
number.
Right.
And I have things available to me that are brand new out there that
right.
I can slip into a wound that will take care of some things that wouldn't have been possible even a year ago.
Right.
And so specialty care, I think, is important for some things. A lot of things can be taken care of without. But what we're talking about is a very specific diabetic wound.
But helps there. Helps there for those patients.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I think one of the things as well, I mean, I'm totally on board with family medicine, internal medicine.
Sure.
Your nurse practitioners that are providing so much of the care. But if you're not getting better, you need to ask, where do I need to go?
Right.
I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. I've seen many, many patients who, and I'm talking about a lot, who would struggle for months and months and months, and some for longer than that. And then finally somebody would send them to our office and they start getting better, you know. And so so people do need to be proactive with their care.
Sure.
You know.
And I think that's kind of what I'm trying to get to with this podcast, to empower people to know, hey, maybe I do need to seek a level of care that's a little bit different than where I am.
Right.
Well, Ray, this has been delightful. You and I have been friends for a very, very long time, and we got to catch up today, and our time together is always special, and I think you're an amazing doc. And so, folks, this is the end of our fourth podcast. Wow, already at four, and so it's a wrap.
Okay.
A wound wrap.
All right, Doug, thank you very much.
You're listening to Wound Wrap with Dr. Doug Friesen on the Hit That Line Podcast Network.
This podcast has been presented by Bet Online.
This podcast is an exclusive property of Pearson Broadcasting. It may not be copied, reproduced, modified, published, uploaded, reposted, transmitted, or distributed in any way without Pearson Broadcasting's prior written consent.
My Wrangler jeans from Walmart are legit my favorite go-to pants. They got that slim cut that's always fresh for going out.
Hey, what's up?
They're durable enough, even for my shift.
Water wrap.
And stretchy enough for when I want to kick back and chill with a movie. So basically, they can do it all, and on my budget. I mean, come on. You really can't beat all that. Shop your Wrangler pants at Walmart.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.